This is Ana Ojes Castro Guzan, co-founder of Your Words STL, and you're listening to the Gift of Words podcast mini-series. Your Words STL is a 501c3 nonprofit that uses tutoring, creative writing workshops, and collaborative projects to help amplify the voices of marginalized youth. We are committed to bridging racial, cultural, and socioeconomic divides by honing the ability of people to tell their stories while providing opportunities for the community to listen. This podcast is hosted by Michelle Haberberger, Development Manager of Your Words STL.
The next installment of our Giving Tuesday mini-series, part of the hashtag Gift of Words Giving Tuesday campaign. Our idea is to reach out to experts in the area who are tied to our family, the YWSTL family in a certain way, and ask them to give us the gift of their words. Whatever their field is, whatever brings them to YWSTL, we want them to kind of share their brain and their creativity and their energy with us. So all that being said, I'm very excited to introduce our guest for this episode, Jason Vassar Elong.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you are so welcome. Thank you. So tell us a little bit about you. Who are you and what is your connection to YWSTL? You've actually been around a lot longer than me. I feel like I should be introducing myself to you because you were kind of there from the beginning, right?
Yeah, my time with the Young Your Words STL has been a very enlightening one. They were looking for funding for a program they were doing called Louder Than a Bomb. And I put them in contact with James Sherburn, who was at the time the executive director for Deaf Incorporated. And so we were able to have poets who had who were members of the hearing community, deaf and hard of hearing community, to actually perform their poetry at Louder Than a Bomb. And it was a huge success. And that was really my introduction into working with Your Words STL. So after that, I mean, we really just started a community-based relational organizational relationship, but it blossomed into something much more because I believe their mission and mine are closely aligned with one another. So me, I'm a writer. I've been writing since I was in middle school. I went to performing arts middle school and have always been drawn to poetry. And as of late, have also been drawn to essays and short stories as well. But I'm someone who is, would like to think that I'm a great writer. Of course, all great writers think that they are. But I think that, you know, my experience as a man of color, particularly a Black man, has, you know, informed my work in a way that's very unique.
Right, absolutely. And I know that you have some poetry out, and I think you volunteered to share some with us. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm happy to
share. Yay! What better way to give a gift of words than to actually like gift a poem? That's incredible. So is this from Shrimp? I saw that you have, that's your first anthology, right?
It is. It's my first collection of poetry, Shrimp. It was published in 2019.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It was published via Two Leaf Press out of New York. It's a small press with big ideas. And I'm going to read a poem out of this collection entitled Fear of Heights. And okay. This poem is really about what it means to be young in relation to what it means to be an adult. Here we are, Fear of Heights. Children don't expect the world to chew them up. All they know is how to run after wild animals, wanting to touch and to feel everything they can. Imagine how it felt to walk for the first time, to not know what falling was, and yet you got up to have at it again. When I ran around my mother's carpet in a blue onesie, I shocked myself what looked like a ball, snapped and popped, but didn't stop trying. It wasn't until I became a man that I acquired a fear of heights.
So talk a little bit about what brought that poem into being, thank you for sharing it, first of all. Well, obviously it's relevant to YWSTL, or maybe was that intentional? You picked it because you felt like there was a subject tie there?
No, I didn't. I actually just...
No?
No.
Okay, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. It's fine. I'm not a poet. So you tell me what it means.
I picked it because it reminds me whenever I read it of the fearlessness that children have. And I think a lot of what Your Words STL does is they try to bring out that fearlessness in children.
Yes.
If you go to any public park in St. Louis, you'll see a young child running after geese, or unafraid to pet a dog or to do things as adults we're more reserved and we wouldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we get older, as we get older, I believe we acquire this fear that just isn't there when you're a child. And so I wanted to write a poem that captured that moment when a child is just fearless in their purest form.
For you, you see that as part of what YWSTL does? Is that kind of what draws you to the organization? Like, I know you've supported the organization for a long time in a variety of ways. Is it that kind of, that force? Is that what draws you?
Yes, it is. It is that force.
Very cool. All right. So let's back up just a little bit. You've shared this incredible poem. What is poetry and why should poetry matter, especially for young people like you're talking about?
Poetry is, it's all about emotion. It's about capturing an image, a moment in time. Poems don't have to be short. They can be long. They don't have to rhyme. But they have to evoke an image and or an emotion. And I think that poetry is important, particularly now, because, we need literature that's accessible. A novel, as great as they are, sometimes they can be intimidating to the reader to where they won't finish it. But a poem is more digestible. You can pick up a book of poetry and find something that resonates with you rather quickly. And I think in this age in which we live, that access to literature becomes quite important when you need a pick-me-up, when you need to hear something inspirational, when you need to hear something angry, if you're angry, you need to pick something up that can give you that quick and fast, validation of how you feel.
Do you use poetry to kind of speak into your own life like that?
All the time.
Can you give us an example of like a time where you do that?
Yes. It was a time when I watched quite a bit of television. As a person who studies African diaspora studies or issues dealing with the African diaspora, it always struck me as odd when people talked about Africans as subhuman or primates or people that were subjugated in this or that way. And then I watched Tarzan, and I said, well, here it is. They have this man who isn't black, who is of the jungle, and people accept this as something to behold, something to be impressed by, whereas, a person like myself is characterized as a monkey or a gorilla in a pejorative way. And so I think that, it's interesting how society tries to use image to evoke emotion. And that's what I like to do with my poetry, is do just the same, evoke an image or an emotion with my work.
Okay, so I feel like you've kind of reached into the question that I just have to ask. Like, we're talking about images, and your poetry collection is called Shrimp. So, like, why shrimp? How is that related to your subject matter? I mean, I like to eat them. Is that where we're going? No?
Well, it, sort of. And so I'm an anthropologist by training, and so one of the things that I've always been passionate about is my own culture. In my own African culture specifically. And it's something that drew me as a child to want to discover who I was. And so given the technology we have today with DNA analysis, I was able to trace my ancestry using African ancestry, who are the pioneers in ancestry tracing for African Americans. I was able to trace my maternal ancestry to Cameroon in Central Africa. And upon doing my research, particularly to the Bamileke people in Cameroon, while doing my research, I found that, Cameroon wasn't, of course, always called Cameroon. And when the Portuguese were, you know, traveling the African waters, they traveled what's known as the Wari River. And they saw the large prawn there, and that drew them up that river. And them traversing that river, you know, indirectly led to the capture of Cameroonians who would be Cameroonians to be traded into the West. So they named the region Cameroon because Camarão is Portuguese for large prawn or shrimp. And so that's one layer. That's one layer of why the title of my book is Shrimp. The other is that, you know, shrimp are scavengers. And so for me, in my book, the character picks up pieces of the past in order to sort of reimagine the future. And then, quite frankly, I'm what one would call short in stature. And so growing up, you know, I was often reminded by people, you know, they would call me shrimp as a way to try to put me down. So in many ways, my debut collection of poetry had to be entitled Shrimp because it's about me. It's about my ancestry. It's about my life. And about my upbringing as a young African-American child into a man.
It's your way of taking ownership of not just your heritage, but also, sounds like, your entire life.
Absolutely.
I will never look at shrimp the same way again, but that's not going to stop me from eating them. I hope that's okay.
That's okay.
Okay, good. Whew, I was a little worried there for a second. Let's talk a little bit about, like, you know, you're talking about the past. Let's think about the year 2020 for a second. How much our society has changed as it relates to the concept of normal. Why is poetry, or any form of storytelling for that matter, still important in the year 2020 when it feels like we don't have time for anything else, right? Other than like managing the daily crisis. Does poetry still matter right now?
Absolutely. Poetry, like other forms of literature, it's an escape. Mm-hmm. It's a way you can pick something up and just sort of be somewhere else for a while. And then maybe the vacation someone needs to really just be able to let go, you know, and escape for a bit before they get back to the madness, because it has been a challenging year on many levels for a lot of people. I don't want to say everybody, but for a lot of people, you know, and myself in particular has been particularly challenging. But I find that picking up a good book, you know, not just poetry, but fiction, nonfiction, a magazine, any kind of literature that you can escape into is helpful in times like these.
What are your favorite escapes right now?
My favorite escapes are, of course, books of poetry. I just finished reading The Atlantic Sound by Carl Phillips he's a Brit. He's a man of color who is a Black man who was born in Europe. And his first book, The European Tribe, was all about looking for writers of the African diaspora who found themselves in Europe. And so he talks about meeting James Baldwin and other writers in that first collection. And then his second collection, The Atlantic Sound, is really all about how people like myself, like African Americans or people of the African diaspora, what they do with learning about their ancestry. Like, how do, you know, how are the ways in which that manifests itself? And so I've been escaping in that book. I've also been reading The Children of Blood and Bone,
which is
a really good book. And so I have a lot of reading that I've been doing thus far.
I'm 3 degrees removed from that author. I am nowhere, anywhere near as cool as she is, but my best friend was a Pitch Wars mentee, and Children of Blood and Bone is by far the biggest book to come out of Pitch Wars. Are you enjoying it? Do you love it?
I am. Yes.
Indeed. Yes. Okay. I don't want to get down the sci-fi and fantasy book tangent because we'll never come back from it. So a little bit more of a specific question. Like, it sounds like so much of what you read and what you write is all related to this concept of heritage. Can that work begin younger? Like, I'm thinking about YWSTL and our kids who are exploring identity, it seems like, with everything that we do, everything that we put on. Is that something that can begin at a young age? And how would that look compared to what sounds like a pretty complicated process for yourself?
You know, I think it can happen. I think if I had known about my ancestry younger, I would have, because what I've done so far, I'm learning the language. I'm meeting people from my ancestral home. I'm learning things about myself that I've always wanted to learn. And I'm in my 40s now. I'm 42. And I think if I was a teenager learning this, I would have had, you know, much more life left to experience and to learn and to grow in that realm. And so I think it's important for children, particularly, to know who they are and where they come from, just so they can have that as an anchor. You know, I grew up with so many children who, you know, they were so proud of being Irish. You know, they were so proud of being, you know, whomever they were. And I didn't have anything beyond being Black. And so I wanted to have something of my own that I can anchor myself in, that can give me a sense of identity as removed from this American experience, which is often diluted by us being one type of people and we're not. You know, I think it's very important, but I think children also need to understand that they can just be themselves too. They don't have to, you know, they can like what they like. They don't have to be, you know, like I was trained to be an athlete, you know, when I was a kid. I was put into sports, whether I wanted to be put into sports or not. And I think there ought to be space for children to figure out, you know, and to make decisions on what they want to do and what they don't want to do.
When you think about kids as they're kind of exploring, you know, I think one of the best things about youth, especially like teenagers, younger teenagers, is they're starting to figure out who they want to be. They're starting to find their direction, but there's still so much yet to be decided or determined, so much yet to be formed in any young person's life. So thinking about, like, if you had, or if any young person had that information and context of the heritage and the previous culture growing up, how do you see that influencing the life of a child?
I see them giving them a whole experience as a person. And I don't know if other people can identify with this, but when you grow up as an African American, there's a part of you that you don't get a chance to know. You know, there's an African part of you that is either hidden from you, it is, you know, no one knows about it, but there's a yearning there, I believe, for many people of African descent to know who they are and where they come from, specifically in Africa. You know, what are those cultures? What are those languages? Back in the 70s and in the 60s, a lot of people were, you know, changing their names, like Cassius Clay changed his name to Muhammad Ali, you know, or Malcolm Little changed his name to Malcolm X, all in an effort to redefine who they were, to get back to who they were at their base level. And I think there's a yearning in the African-American community for that, you know, to connect with our heritage in ways in which we've always wanted to. Because you got to remember, our ancestors were brought to this country in chains. And so a lot of what they knew about themselves was beaten out of them. Mm-hmm. And so for a person to take ownership of that now, there's power there. You know, there's power there. And there's something that can't be taken away. When a person knows who they are and they can identify and align themselves with who they are culturally, you can't do anything about that but watch that person grow to be who they're meant to be.
There's a thunderstorm going on right now, and the thunder is like, I don't know if it's coming out over the mic, I'm sure it's not, but it's like accentuating your points. Like, nature is kind of your hype man right now, and it is awesome from this perspective. Like, I feel like your words are prophecy or something. It's fantastic. It's very, I'm just having one heck of a time talking to you right now. Thinking about kids today, is that particularly important to do in this life that we're all living in right now? And if so, how?
It is, you know, and I think they start by asking questions, you know, and I think, you know, there's beauty in knowing where you are, where you come from, but there's also beauty that is knowing your family, you know the elders in your family, and take time to speak to those elders about their lives. You know, what was it like for them growing up? You know, what were they doing as a child? Like, what were their aspirations? You know, did your grandfather always want to be a foreman? You know, did he have other dreams? You know, did your grandmother always want to be a cook, or did she have other dreams? You know, or a nurse? You know, so I think it starts with understanding who we are as people and really taking the time to spend time with our elders and see who they are. And versus who they, let's see, who were they when they were kids versus who they are now as we know them as grandparents and parents and aunts and uncles. So I think it starts there. And then from there, you can, I think children can branch off into learning more about themselves ancestrally, which would only but add to that, to that rich history that they'll learn.
Yeah. And then from there, is that where you see them kind of, you talked about also having like your own identity. It's almost like you build that foundation, right? And then kids move forward with that almost added support in order to kind of really fully explore who they want to be. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Absolutely.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. I'm going to switch it up just a little bit because I was checking out your other works on Amazon, and you had one that caught my eye immediately, Crossing the Divide from the Poets of St. Louis, which sounds a heck of a lot like the title of one of YWSTL's programs, Crossing Del Mar. Talk a little bit about this concept of crossing divides, crossing Del Mars, and how it plays into you, your life as a poet, as well as what is happening with YWSTL.
Well, you know, that was one of the projects I'm really am happy to be a part of. The late Michael Castro, Dr. Michael Castro, that was the brainchild of his. You know, he wanted to bring the poetry community together in St. Louis. Because, you know, whether you want to realize it or not, I mean, every sector has its self-segregation, you know, like there are academic poets and then there are spoken word poets, there are haiku poets, there are black poets, white poets, Asian poets, there are, you know, people who have written one poem, people have written thousands of poems. But what Dr. Castro wanted to do was bring all those people to the table to say something about where they are and who they are. And so thus he created this anthology, Crossing the Divide from the Poets of St. Louis. It was published back in 2016 by Vagabond Press, which is a press that's actually out of California. Dr. Castro was very influential in his, he was the first poet laureate of St. Louis. And,
yep.
And in his tenure, he really worked tirelessly to bring our community together, you know, whether it was through events, whether it was through anthologies, whatever. His mission was to bring us together as a group of people.
And what did you contribute to it?
I contributed a few poems to that collection. Actually, let me go grab it off my bookshelf. Now, I was Jason Vassar then. I'm Jason Vassar Elong now, but I definitely contributed a few poems to this collection. And then I'm looking at the name in this collection, and I just noticed some really powerful poets like Alison Rollins. There's so many people, Eugene Redman, you know, Darlene Roy. There are so many great, great poets that are part of this anthology. And there are also some folks in here that you may not have known before. And I think there's beauty in knowing that their work is sitting alongside some really great writers.
Hmm.
You know, and that's the beauty of what Michael Castro was really about. It's really trying to bridge the divide between the poetry community. And so I actually have two poems in here, one Foster and the other Junebug in the Alley.
So I would love, since we're, I do have one more question for you. And then if you're okay, I'd love for you to maybe close with one of those. Would that be okay?
Sure, of course.
Fantastic. So it almost sounds like what you're saying about this book is by bringing all of these different sides and aspects and facets of the poetry community together, there's something even greater being created. That sounds a lot like what YWSTL is trying to do with our program. Is that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
What is the Del Mar Divide? I'm sure most people listening already know, but if you can give just the quick definition, what is the Del Mar Divide and how is the Crossing Del Mar program related to that for YWSTL?
To me, Crossing the Divide is really all about, you know, forced segregation in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at the Del Mar Loop, you know, you look at, you know, infrastructure and business and small business and big business. But then you go, you know, north of that and you see desolation. It's one of the few communities that you can go in St. Louis and see mansions and see people homeless in the same community.
Yes.
You know, and I think Crossing the Del Mar is really about learning about St. Louis from that perspective. That, you know, you can see a mansion, but all you need to do is go a few feet in some cases and you'll see someone begging for a dollar or a sandwich, you know. And I think what Michael Castro was trying to do was to be sure that didn't happen to the poetry community. He didn't want that division. You know, he didn't want there to be academic poets who didn't talk to spoken word poets, who didn't talk to young poets, who didn't talk to old poets. He wanted all of us to be talking together And I think that's what he did successfully in Crossing the Divide and other programs.
Absolutely. Do you have anything else to add?
Well, no, I just want to thank you for taking the time to chat with me about my work and about, you know, I really want to encourage, you know, folks to really get involved, because this is such a worthwhile program to be a part of and to have your children be a part of as well.
I couldn't agree more. And thank you for everything you've done for the organization as a board member, as a contributing artist, as someone we turn to when we have questions about, like, so what should we do next? Like, from what I understand, you have been invaluable, and we appreciate you. Would you mind giving us one more gift, though, and closing with a poem?
Absolutely. I'm going to read Junebug in the Alley.
Okay.
This is taken from Crossing the Divide from the Poets of St. Louis, selection by Michael Castro. Junebug in the Alley. In the hood, there are Olympians in training, flipping from the concrete slabs in alleyways with perfect form, springing from mattresses discarded from the high rises. Imagine what they see in themselves as they run, then leap, the open air at their feet, in pure confidence that they will make it over.
Funny that they're very similar in theme about youth, right? And not knowing to be afraid and finding that power in yourself.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what poetry is all about. It's what YWSTL is all about. I don't know if I could have, we'll pretend that we planned it, that we made, that we selected these in advance with this perfect beginning and ending, and we'll just go with it. And we just won't tell anybody. although we kind of already did, but it's fine. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Bye.
Bye.
Learn more about YWSTL at www.yourwordsstl.org. You can check us out on social media on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at Your Words STL. Our intro sounds are by Joey Ferber, and these outro sounds are by Asia Berlin. Ba, 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 ba.